It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Howdy. Welcome to the program. We are super glad to be with you, and you need us because the market is doing crazy things. Well, not real crazy. It's doing things that we don't like. And I've got just a guy to talk about it, Mr. Scott Connor.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
What do you say, Scott?
Well, Thursday was a rough day in the market.
Yeah, you're not real happy, I can tell.
Well, it started off fairly weak and got progressively weaker, and by the last half hour of the day or so, it really was pretty weak. S&P down 20, still above 1300 at 1304, but we'll likely lose that tomorrow. NASDAQ down 60 at 2813. Apple has been selling off pretty quickly. It wasn't that long ago. It was in the 620 range, and it's in the 530 range now. So
there's some out there, and I don't know if it's just, you know, they're trying to sell it short and make money in the process. But some folks out there saying, yeah, it's going to be inside of 500.
It could be. I mean, the way the momentum that it has now, it certainly could be. And the Dow down 157 at 12,441. Thursday marked 11 of the last 12 days in negative territory for the Dow. Oil almost flat, down 28 cents at 92.53. Pretty decent spike in gold on Thursday, up 36 at 15.73. Some speculation that was short covering because that was a quick reversal of negative momentum.
Yeah.
And here's always, you know, something that we're keeping a close eye on that a lot of investors don't watch. 10-year Treasury yields all-time low, 1.702 at the close. That's low.
Time for some risk off, right?
Well, I think we've seen people coming out of the markets and coming out of gold, and what they've been going into are German bunds, U.S. Treasuries, and the dollar.
Can you see it going any lower? I mean, obviously it can, but I mean...
Yeah, it certainly can. I'm a little surprised it's lower now than it was in, say, October of last year when things sold off really quickly, and there was certainly more fear in the market than there is now.
So maybe this is smarter money than fear? I mean, is that what...
Yeah, it could be. It could be. We did not see the upward pressure in the dollar like we're seeing right now. We didn't see that last year. And I think a lot of that, we've been talking about runs. I'm reluctant to use the term runs, but we've been talking about a lot of money coming out of European banks. It's cash. It has to go somewhere. And if it's supposed to be cash, you know, it's not surprising that that goes into the dollar. So I think the dollar is strengthening because just so much money is coming out of Spanish banks and Greek banks.
Where's the euro? Around $1.30?
It was inside of that last time I saw it. 127 or so. So yeah,
And what's the other thing that's really hammering the Dow is J.P. Morgan, right?
Well, J.P. Morgan and Caterpillar on Thursday's trade. So J.P. Morgan, as you said yesterday, there is a lawsuit pending against Mr. Dimon. He's been called to testify in Washington. So things are not really good at J.P. Morgan. And Meredith Whitney, who is occasionally right, came out and she said that the fallout from that so-called hedging trade, which by no means was a hedging trade, no matter what you read.
They were gambling.
Yeah, it was prop money. It wasn't client money. So, but it could get a lot worse. Still at about a $2 billion estimate right now.
But it's not over.
It's definitely not over. And part of the problem with a trade like this is that everybody knows, everybody who trades in this market knows exactly what JP Morgan has that they have to get rid of. And if you're dealing with somebody that you know has to get rid of it. Right. If you're buying a house from somebody who has to get rid of their house today, you're going to, you know, that's going to have an impact on the price you offer.
Don't they use the analogy of a whale? And
well, the whale was the guy that was doing the trades.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like, you know, the whale out in the ocean and there's 16 or 20 killer whales trying to eat it. And right now that's probably how that trader feels about his trade.
Yeah, he can't be terribly comfortable. Mr. Diamond is certainly not comfortable either. Economic news, Fitch downgraded Greece to CCC. On the Fitch scale, that is default is a high probability. So, I mean, that really shouldn't be a surprise, but it's just more pressure on Europe. That comes on the heels of Moody's telling a number of Spanish banks that they were about to have their ratings lowered, which came on the heels of Moody's lowering 26 Italian banks earlier in the week. So Spanish 10-year yields back above 6%.
I am glad, Scott, that you have moved our portfolios to be as low as we go on the European and overseas exposures because, man.
Yeah, we can never be all the way out of that because then you're just not following an asset allocation strategy anymore, but we are underweight Europe about as far as we can be right now. So that's good news. Back home, economic news. We had claims for unemployment benefits on Thursday, as we always get, the weekly number, and basically was flat at 370,000, so no help there. We had leading economic indicators, which were actually not very good. They surprised the market to the downside. Philly Fed Index surprised the market to the downside. So, you know, we had so much nice momentum going, but it really seems to have escaped us. And your friend, Warren Buffett, in the news on Thursday, has announced that he is making a significant purchase of Media General, $142 million in cash, plus a $400 million loan and a $45 million credit line. Media General owns a lot of newspapers in the Southeast. They own the Tampa Tribune. They own 18 different TV stations, including the NBC affiliate in Tampa. So pretty big news there, although I don't know why anybody would want to own a newspaper, but...
Well, we just talked to Halifax Media, and they do. So I think they're getting. I think what Ron Wallace shared on the program, which is that they're getting them at a good price, and there's still a market for that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And then the last final piece of news: Facebook did finally price their IPO at the very end of the day on Thursday. IPO price at $38. We'll see a trade on the market on Friday.
And more is coming to bear, right?
Yeah,
like 25% volume is going to increase.
Yeah, that includes the
so they've raised the price and they've raised the volume of number of shares they're going to offer.
Right, and we'll see the first trades tomorrow at some point.
Okay, very good. Well, we will take a short break and come right back. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back. I didn't tell you what was happening before the break because this is going to be the power hour. Well, the power 20 minutes. I have Annie Logue, rhymes with Vogue. Annie Logue, who is the author of Socially Responsible Investing for Dummies. Yeah. Annie, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You've got a great voice for radio. I like it.
Oh, good.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to have you on. You know, socially responsible investing is one of these things I think for a lot of investors is kind of a mystery. They don't really know how to do it. And I will confess that I, among all the other advisors out there and doing the work we do, we sometimes are not as aware of, you know, the social responsible investing. And so I think that, you know, this kind of exposure is good and something that people need to know about.
It's a complicated topic, and it's complicated in large part because people don't necessarily have clear guidelines to what they consider to be, you know, investments that they're not interested in. My joke is that it's like the perfect job, the perfect boyfriend, the perfect political candidate. They're not out there, right? The perfect stock isn't out there either. And yet, if people are very clear about what it is that they object to or what it is that they're trying to do, then they can have a great deal of success or at least have performance that is competitive.
That makes sense to me. And, you know, I feel like I was afraid I might get thrown into the deep end of the pool. So that's why I have my chaperone, Scott Connor, with me. I told you before we started, he's our CFA here in the office. So, and manages our portfolios and does that quite well, I might add, Scott.
No, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, the most basic thing, Annie, is that people can have, you're telling them they can't have their cake and eat it too, but they can certainly have their social investing or socially responsible investing and eat it too. You know, they can, in other words, they can get returns and get performance without having to sacrifice their belief system.
Right. A lot of people believe that socially responsible investing always leads to worse returns. And I think that's something that a lot of advisors believe. And it has to be done right. A lot of the experience with well-done social investing has come from different religious orders, endowments at religious colleges, and labor union pensions, because those organizations will often have clear ideas of things that they will or will not invest in. You know, for labor unions, it's often related to unionization policies or labor practices overseas. And for different religious denominations, it depends on, you know, each denomination, they have their own hot buttons. But, for example, a lot of Catholic hospitals will not invest their pension money in products, in guns, in tobacco, in companies that make products used in abortion. The Jesuit order is pretty adamant about not wanting to invest in military companies. And you can do that as long as you're very clear about what it is that you do or do not want to invest in. And then the next step is to find things to replace those in your portfolio. Okay, because pensions are required by law to have competitive performance. They have to be invested for the benefit of the people who receive the pensions, and for their economic benefit, not anything else that's going on. And so pensions that want to have a social mission need to be able to document their performance and need to be able to show that this work that they did, say by choosing not to invest in tobacco companies, did not harm their performance. So the key then is finding things to replace what you're taking out of the portfolio. So finding something with some kind of similar characteristics. So maybe if your problem is defense contractors, what you're also thinking of is global high technology companies or global manufacturing companies, things that have some similar characteristics, but maybe aren't necessarily involved with the industry that you have a problem with.
So it sounds like really one of the things to keep in mind when doing the socially responsible investing, it sounds like it's very should be tailored to the individual, because you, as I'm hearing you describe some of what goes into this, I'm thinking practically speaking that, you know, how to get a portfolio that will be diversified enough, and you're going to have to navigate through the things that is the like and the not like, or the preferences and the non-preferences for a particular individual.
And I think if you go to a financial advisor and you want to have a social component to your portfolio, you need to be very clear yourself with what will or will not be acceptable to you.
That's an excellent point, and because I think it's going otherwise the advisor is going to be kind of jumping from one foot to the other. We have Annie Logue on the program with us today, and she's talking about socially responsible investing. And we're not dummies; we're listening to what she says. But the book is Socially Responsible Investing for Dummies, mm-hmm. And we're going to take a short break. Annie, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Okay, thank you.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market?
How can you tell?
It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, we are back, and you've got a double dose of CFAs on the program and just one lowly certified financial planner, CPA, tagging along, trying to keep up with them.
Most people try to avoid conversations with two CFAs.
Maybe I can understand a little bit why now, but no, it's good stuff. I'm just kidding. I appreciate the insight, Annie, and I think that for our listeners, Scott had a question for you, and we were talking on the break about helping define this a little bit. And for those of you just joining us, Annie Logue is the author of Socially Responsible Investing for Dummies, and she and Scott now are going to talk, and I'm going to try to keep up.
Well, I just thought, Annie, since it's such a broad term, socially responsible investing, can you give us an idea really of some of the different categories? And I always think green energy, but I know it's a lot broader than that. So can you give us some context around that?
Well, and that is one of the issues, because it is very, very broad. And when people start talking about it, and then you kind of pin them down and say, well, what is your issue? For many people, it is environmental. It's either trying to promote new technologies that are going to be kinder to the environment or reduce our energy consumption, or they want to avoid companies that are known polluters, or both. But for many investors, it's related to different social factors, treatment of workers, treatment of communities. For some people, some religious denominations have very strict guidelines for investing. For example, devout Muslims may not invest in companies that are engaged in alcohol, tobacco, pornography, gambling, pork processing, or paying or receiving interest.
Yeah, that's definitely hard to keep up with.
Right. I mean, that's a very, very specific guideline that is set in the tenets of their religion. Other people belong to religion that doesn't necessarily set guidelines that must be followed, but where there are things that they want to encourage or want to discourage because of that. So, you know, that may be military spending, that might be alcohol and gambling, or whatever it is.
So you can do negative screens or positive screens, meaning things you specifically want to avoid or things you specifically want to participate in.
Exactly. And there are several mutual fund companies that have funds that use different kinds of screens, but you want to check and see, or have your advisor check and see how they're screening these companies socially. And then the next question is, well, what are they investing in instead? Because any kind of negative screen has to have some kind of a positive screen. The reality is that alcohol and tobacco companies, for example, they're really good performers.
Yeah, and good dividend payers, too, in a value.
Exactly. So if you're going to walk away from those, you've got to find something else to invest in instead.
So how do our listeners go out in the marketplace and find things that are in tune to their consciousness?
Well, you know, this is one of the things is this becomes a very classic, to pull CFA talk on you, very classic risk and return kind of a beta play. Finding things that have similar market characteristics, similar levels of risk, maybe similar characteristics, like you said, with defense, where you're maybe dealing with global technology companies or global manufacturing companies instead of global defense contractors. Or if you think about, say, tobacco, those are global products, global brands that have a component that's highly addictive. But so does things like candy and things like companies like Coca-Cola, where they're also global brands, and they're maybe not as dangerous and addictive as cigarettes, but they have that characteristic to them. And that's, you know, it's very interesting. That's something Warren Buffett really believes in investing in. He's a big investor in candy, with Dairy Queen and See's Candy and Mars. So there's some of that, you know, by avoiding one, but looking for what's the characteristic that makes it such a top performer. So that, I think, is one thing that's very important. Another thing when people are thinking about social investing is whether or not they can influence a company's behavior, say by voting proxy statements, and that's something that a lot of institutions have done, in cases where they maybe can't tailor their investing or don't feel that it's appropriate to tailor their investing, but they instead use their influence with how they vote for company management. And we've seen that just come up with Bank of America and Chase about having shareholders vote on CEO compensation. And they approved the compensation package for Chase, but not for Citigroup and not for Bank of America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a big vote on J.P. Morgan on that same case as well this week.
Yeah, J.P. Morgan Chase. So it's like shareholders have some power, and they're becoming more aware of that, about making sure that management is working for shareholder purposes and not, say, in the case of the banks, taking unnecessary risks that are destabilizing both to the economy and to the shareholders. Or asking shareholders will often vote on different environmental issues or different issues related to overseas business practices. And that can be an effective way. Even if those votes don't pass, they make management know that you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Annie,
yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the funds that you like, or some of the fund families that you know to be specifically focusing in on the social responsibility. So hang in there. We'll be right back.
Okay, great.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back, and we have Annie Logue. I'm going to get that right. I'm not going to mess that up, Annie. Annie Logue, who is the author of Socially Responsible Investing for Dummies. And she's sharing with us the things to know about socially responsible investing. And before the break, we were talking about some of the different nuts and bolts of this. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is if you could give, I guess I've got kind of a two-part question. One is, can we talk about some of the funds that are really, you've known to be good at this? And also kind of goes with that is, how do we, in building a portfolio, because, you know, this is what we do every day for our clients, for those that would be interested, how do we make sure that we maintain enough diversification and getting a right mix, you know, getting a nice, good mix of different investments to maintain the risk level we want to achieve with the portfolio?
Well, in terms of mutual funds, there are several fund companies that have different explicit social goals and that have had competitive performance. One that I think is very interesting is a fund company called Amana, and they invest according to Islamic precepts, and their performance has been phenomenal because they didn't invest in any banks, so they weren't affected by the 2008 financial crisis. That's not a typical situation, though. I think that was a one-time fluke. But a lot of people who are not Muslim invest with Amana either because it matches what they're interested in or because they have had good performance. There is a fund family called Praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, and it's managed by a firm called Everlands. And Praxis is a family of Christian mutual funds. They were actually founded, the original company name was MMA Praxis, from Mennonite Mutual Aid. And so they invest a lot thinking about long-term stewardship and health and safety and issues like that. There is a fund company called Domini, D-O-M-I-N-I, that was one of the first and the largest of the socially responsible fund companies. They are more secular focused, very strongly related, or very strongly interested in environmental factors and also in shareholder activism, in whether or not company managements are being responsive to their customers and their shareholders and their communities. and they've been very aggressive as an activist, and their philosophy is a little bit that sometimes you're better off buying something you don't like and putting pressure on the management to improve it than you are just buying things you like.
And Annie, are these mostly equity funds that you're describing, or are there also balanced funds available, and is fixed income a big portion of socially responsible investing as well?
Fixed income is indeed possible. Again, the Islamic funds aren't going to do that because paying and receiving interest is against Islam. But the other fund companies do have balanced funds and bond funds or other, and the Islamic funds have other ways to reduce risk or generate income. But I think for people who are looking more for fixed income, Domini and Praxis, and there's another company called Calvert, and they have some options. U.S. government securities are generally considered to be socially acceptable. So, you know, U.S. government bonds, so right then and there you've got a very safe fixed income investment. And for people who are looking for bank accounts, there are many credit unions all over the country that are committed to neighborhood economic development, and credit unions are owned by their members, so they don't need to show a profit. So as an added benefit, they tend to pay higher rates of interest or charge lower rates on loans.
Yeah, that was one of the things that caught my eye in your book that I really had never given any thought to at all, is socially responsible investing in real estate and microfinance and private partnerships. Can you talk a little bit about that?
There's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, real estate development in many communities, as many parts of community economic development programs, there is a big social component about how you create space that will be efficient for small businesses, that will be affordable, that will be diverse enough to provide a community's needs in terms of a mix of small businesses and retail and parks as well as residential. And there have also been several major investment programs involving redevelopment of public housing that have been going on throughout the country. And those have often, a lot of fixed income securities are tied to those projects. So people investing in socially responsible bond funds can often pick up exposure that way. Microfinance is a form of socially responsible investing. The returns are generally not competitive. You're generally doing that more as a good thing.
Like a Kiva type of thing?
Right, yeah. Kiva. Or there are some larger funds that market to institutions, to churches and college endowments and things like that. They encourage their investors to think of it more as a money market replacement in terms of return, although with slightly higher risk, but that's a factor. And there are private partnerships. There are hedge funds that are active as shareholders or that are committed to developing new technologies, you know, energy improving technologies, things like that, that would definitely fit, you know. So Prince Charles, of all people, is a major investor in a socially responsible hedge fund. So,
hey, you got to start somewhere.
Hey, you know, if you had his money, you could do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Annie, I think this has been very helpful to kind of crack open and dig into the socially responsible investing. And for our listeners, the book is Socially Responsible Investing for Dummies. Mm-hmm. And you're not a dummy to get the book. And Annie also has a website where she does a blog and, of course, can share a lot more. It's www.annlogue.com. And Annie, we appreciate you having you on the program today. It's been very helpful. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for being with us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.